It's Friday on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's almost snowman season for you, Justin. I thought about this morning. Did I know that the winter wonderland was back? No.
No, a little reminder that we're in the middle of winter this morning.
Our snowplow drivers. Good morning to our grinders up our this heroes. Morning, our heroes. I saw a bunch of you on the road this morning. I thought they are the heartbeat of this city and nationwide. The little January 13 snowfall. Mm-hmm. We've got the snowplow drivers that listen to the show. We got to shout you out. Ian, the snowplow driver, I know you're listening, buddy. Keep grinding for us.
Hell yeah. Yeah, a little reminder. We've been kind of just like floating around 5 degrees.
Oh my God, it's been raining.
Every day.
It's like we live in Vancouver.
No, yeah, it's just been kind of dreary. And you kind of lull yourself into a false sense of security. It's not even winter. Woke up this morning, scraping off the car.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's mid-January.
Sucks
still.
To suck for you. You got no parking
shelter.
Garage like me.
I mean, I could throw it in the garage, but I don't.
Yeah, because your garage is definitely a fiasco.
It's a bit of a fiasco.
I just knew it.
Yeah. I tried once, though. It's a very small garage.
You've got bins in there, stuff that you don't need.
Nah,
I know it.
I don't know about that.
Go to Value Village and drop off some of those lamps that you've got in there that you're never going to use.
No lamps.
You probably have like a, what are those things called? A lantern.
A lantern?
Like with oil.
What would I be doing with a lantern?
I don't know. You've kept it.
No. I'm not a hoarder. But it's so small that even, like, I have a mini fridge in there.
Yeah, there we go.
And it sticks out enough. The mini fridge.
Well, is it plugged in?
Sticks out enough, yes.
Oh, well, then you need that in the garage.
That I can't actually get my car into it. Okay?
We've talked. I don't know if it was me and you. Well, I don't know how many people I've done the show with. But going out to the garage and getting a beer from a mini fridge is a different experience. It's a different beer.
I feel like I haven't mastered that experience yet. Because it's like,
you have a garage. That's a privilege.
But I don't know how necessary it is because it's cold in the garage. So I'm like, should I have this on during winter? Am I just wasting energy? I don't even have beers in the fridge right now as is.
My experience of that was balcony beers.
The best thing about a party.
You just
in
put it
winter,
on the balcony.
In Ontario, you just throw the beers outside. It's a real issue in the summer. Real issue spring and fall.
You can do that today.
Throw it right in the snowbank. It was actually the Christmas party move at my parents' house. They had warm beer when I arrived. And I was like, we got to do something about this, guys.
Really? CC wasn't prepared?
So we just chucked him in the snowbank.
Well, today there'll be snowbanks. Shout out. We got already Ian in the text line. He knows. Thanks for the plug. Ian, the snowplow driver. Stadium property stars. Let's go. We got another text. Morning. Plowing already getting stuff opened up. I love it.
I haven't looked ahead to what we might have in front of us here the weekend in terms of snow and weather and all that stuff. I did expect you, though, however.
To have the scarf here. I didn't realize until I pulled out of the parking garage that we had a snowfall.
Didn't look outside.
Well, it's pitch black outside.
That's the disadvantage.
It's pitch black.
Of your nice, cozy mornings.
I live on a floor that isn't the ground floor of a condo, so I didn't go look out my window in the darkness at 4:30 to see if it was snow. So I'll be prepared. If Monday there's snow, you're getting the scarf.
Okay.
You thought that maybe I forgot about it, I think.
No, I don't think you forget about anything, to be honest.
You're right. Trevor in Scarborough, I started plowing at 5. Should have opened everything up pretty quick. Careful out there. Ice under the snow from the rain earlier. Take it easy until it's salted and the sun is up. Thank you, Trevor. I feel like we got a little 680 news energy sometimes with the weather and our loyal snowplow drivers. So
it's an important update.
It is. All right. A win and a loss last night.
Toronto sports.
You can't have good things all the time. Okay. Something's got to bring you down to earth. That was the Toronto Maple Leafs 4-1 loss against the Red Wings, who they've had an incredible stretch against, 8 consecutive wins against his team, mm-hmm. but on a back-to-back on the road without Austin Matthews before a monster game on Saturday, scheduled loss, it felt like.
I guess it was. I guess I probably should have identified that yesterday in the Wake and Rake.
Classic.
But that's not
an excuse. They still played poorly.
The Leafs have sort of like ripped up those narratives to a certain extent for the most part this year since their brutal start. They haven't fallen into these traps as much. Yeah, I guess there have been a couple games here and there where it's like, all right, you know, they didn't quite have it tonight. Maybe it was a schedule loss. Maybe there's some sort of variable that we didn't consider. But for the most part, it doesn't really matter the situation, especially against a team like the Detroit Red Wings, who they just dominate and have dominated since Austin Matthews came to town, that it hasn't really mattered. But on this night, it seemed to matter that it was the second half of a back-to-back. And it seemed to matter that Austin Matthews was in the lineup. It seemed to matter a little bit more that the situation wasn't ideal, which is just natural, I guess, for a hockey team, but a little disappointing because we've come to maybe expect differently.
Mm-hmm. They've had a pretty great record on back-to-backs. Last night, they dropped that in front of their dads. The dads' trip snuck up a little bit.
The dads' trip does continue on to Boston, thankfully. So they're not all sour.
It's better than going out in Detroit.
Oh, they're going out in Boston.
They're going out in Boston. But the men, the dads, up in the press box, lots of zooming in there in the third period when things were looking a little rough. A lot of beers getting crushed.
Michael Bunting's dad trying to turn it up a little bit.
Michael Bunting's dad was ready to get in one.
Anyone who's identifying other people who don't have a full glass.
He's the guy at the party.
They're full gas.
He's like,
slamming it.
No, you got an empty
cup. Having a night.
Yeah. Let me pour some in there.
Because you're trying to drag everyone else into the fight, right?
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Michael Bunting's dad was trying to do.
It runs in the family.
I will say, I don't know if anyone was dragging anyone else into the fight onto the ice.
No. It was a game with a little bit of a lack of punch in terms of physicality, in terms of sticking up to teammates, but in terms of your play and your performance as well. It was a much different look from two nights ago where it was a dominant performance from the core three at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I say both times on Wednesday night and Thursday night, goaltending was a significant bright spot in the Toronto Maple Leafs play. Samsonov last night was a reason they stayed into this game. And I mean, you kind of got to give the guy your team. He gave the team an opportunity to win. I think there's a little bit of bad luck to start the game. Poor Bobby McMahon. I wanted that so bad for the kid. Got my tweet out. I was fired up. My McMantle tweet. Mm. And then I get it. The rules are rules, okay? They're written in a rule book for a reason. There's not supposed to be room for interpretation, but come on. Like, that's... It's sad for the kid. Like, he's not kicking the puck in the net. We need an off-season overhaul of rules because he's kicking the puck to his own stick. It's not into the net. Hits off Buddy's other leg and it goes in, and it just seems unfair. I know it's in the rule book, but can we not make an exception for the kid in front of his dad, his first NHL goal? I don't know.
I mean, it's pretty heartbreaking, right?
It was.
And this isn't like, you know, a prize prospect who's always, always going to score an NHL goal.
Who knows if he gets another one?
There's a distinct possibility that this is it. Like, it's like he's shown something, so I'm not going to put that out there. But
I want to see him in the lineup still. But
Austin Matthews is going to come back, hopefully, Saturday, and that's going to force them to make some move. Is he going to continue to out or be selected over Dryden Hunt? I'm not really sure. I'm not totally convinced. I might be a little bit more impressed with McMahon than I am Hunt to start this little, tryout in the bottom of the depths of the lineup. But there's no guarantee that he's going to get back in. I actually think it probably helps him. They're like, we can't do this kid dirty. Let's try and get him a goal. But that's a moment not promised to that kid. Like, there's a good possibility that, you know, that situation doesn't arise again.
So what do you make of the rule? Okay, like, let's pull out for a second. Don't think about it by being Bobby McMahon's first NHL goal in front of his dad, opportunity that he never scores again. The rule itself and the way it's deployed.
You say we need an overhaul. I almost think we need less words.
Yeah,
less is more.
Erase, go into
like,
the Google Doc.
Just use common sense.
Press the backspace button and let's simplify this.
Just use common sense. If you're a referee and you go to the iPad, the tablet, wherever, did he kick the puck into the net?
No.
He didn't kick the puck into the net. He kicked the puck back into the slot, and it took a deflection and went in. And we can't get too upset about it because the same similar thing happened with Eric Kalla and the Devils. But Hollis is a little different in that he was kicking the puck in the direction at least of the goaltender, which is an attempt at goal, I would
it should
at
be
least
like...
argue. This was not an attempt at goal.
No.
He was not trying to score a goal when he kicked the puck in the direction that he
there
did.
There should be the forward momentum.
Directionality could be
like
the perfect
a shootout.
Thing. But then we're doing like, what's the the we're getting the protractor out in reviews. Like everything, everything will turn into something else. So if you just strip it down and use common sense, was he trying to kick the puck into the net? No. Was Eric Halla trying to kick the puck in the net? No, I would say not.
But he this was trying is the problem. You can't have interpretation.
Exactly. He was trying to kick the puck into a dangerous area, I think.
So why don't we just never kick the puck ever again? Get rid of kicking or say kick is allowed.
You don't want players to be able to kick.
I think you should, like, who cares? You should be able to kick the puck. But there shouldn't be this,
it could be directionality.
I like that. Because in a penalty shootout, you have to continue a forward motion, right? If you don't, they blow it down. What if the puck's going in a forward motion towards the net doesn't count?
Forward motion kick.
But what if the puck is getting kicked one way, pinballs into a forward direction off someone else's skate? See, this is like, there needs to be A, B, C.
I think we just need
index.
Common sense.
I felt for the guy.
Because there will always be a situation where it trips up the ruling. There will always be something.
It just felt so much worse last night.
But if you're just like, hey, did he try to kick it in?
No.
He didn't try to kick it in.
He really wanted to do the right thing and kick it to his own stick.
Well, he would have
scored regardless.
If all he meant is skate didn't get in the way and knock it into the net, his stick was right behind it. He was ready to sweep it in.
Anyway, I'm sure we would be singing a different tune this morning if it was...
We'd be like, Roebuck.
Robbie Fabro, our boss Fabro. Is he related to that kid? He is from Woodbridge. But if it's, Dylan Larkin, we'd be like, oh, yeah, the rule's right. That's the rule. Read the rule book. But
it's probably exactly what we said in that Devils game.
I know. People are like, the puck was kicked in the net. It's no goal. I get it. I read the rules, too.
It wasn't really kicked in the net, though. Kicked into an area, and then someone else's skate took it into the net.
Maybe.
Someone else's momentum took it into the net.
Okay, so what if there's a high stick? So Morgan Riley shoots the puck from the point. It hits off Austin Matthews' high stick, but then it hits Buddy's leg into the net. Is it count?
That's no goal.
Okay, so, but it hit off
or if a leg. A high stick knocked it down, you're waiting, and then someone sweeps it into their own goal. What happens there? I think that would be a goal because the Leafs hadn't played the puck yet.
But
this is the thing. You can't start down this road because they have started down this road and they only create more problems for themselves. Common sense, no review. Human error. That's why it's always better to have human error. There's no way. No one in the arena thought that wasn't a goal, except whoever signaled down from league office. Maybe Derek Lalonde. No one was thinking that. And you're taking goals away from a game, which best part of the game, most people would argue, is goal scoring.
Yeah.
Is just seeing moments where people celebrate a goal. And you're literally taking it off the board because you've gone so far away from the spirit of the rule.
Well, I'm sure it's not the last time we talk about this. It's like goalie interference. It's like the offside review where a fraction of a hair of a skate blade touches the white part of the ice 78 seconds before a goal and they call it back. Goes off someone's butt and somehow it, I don't know.
Buckles are fun.
Well, so should kicking it backwards off another player's leg. We'll surely have some texts about this, so I'll read them. But the reason Bobby McMahon in the lineup, because Austin Matthews out once again. Apparently this time, though, he woke up not feeling well. So Wednesday didn't play because of a lingering injury, a mystery injury that God knows if we'll ever find out. Next day, he apparently woke up feeling worse physically about his illness, but physically better about his injury, whatever. He didn't play both games.
The answer lies with his father, by the way. Was his dad up there in the press box?
I didn't see the dad.
Or did he book a flight Friday for Boston, straight from Arizona?
Yeah, that's why Matthews didn't want to play.
No, I'm saying is like, how pre-planned was this? Did he actually wake up with a tummy ache? Or are they just load managing? Hey, let's take the week off. Let's get you prepared for Boston. Let's just take the load off a little bit because we're dealing with things and we want to make sure you're ready. It's an issue if he doesn't play in Boston. This week was not an issue.
All right. So Saturday night, tomorrow night is our big old litmus test. As you know, headed to the Garden to play the Bruins on the dad's trip. If Austin Matthews doesn't play in that game, we're coming on Monday morning with a little bit of a
Well, and we hopefully will have some answers. There'll be a little bit more clarity on what's holding him out.
If anything, the Leafs are good at is being tight-lipped.
Yeah, but they're going to at least be asked, why is this happening?
Yeah. And he was already asked about it the last two games.
And he's just like, yeah, he's dealing. They make an excuse.
Yeah, but he was asked specifically if it had to do with the fact that there's a really big game on Saturday and maybe they're holding him out. If the player wants to play, like, he would make that decision and, it's nothing to do with the game on Saturday.
But it's teeing up. So those questions are funneled towards, okay, what's happening Saturday? So when we find out what's happening Saturday, I feel like at least they'll have to answer the question to a certain degree. Yeah, they're not going to like tell us exactly what's going on. But if he misses the game, it means something's up.
Yes.
And they'll have to address that.
Well, we'll talk about that Monday. But no Matthews, felt the presence more yesterday, but factors included back-to-back, a little bit of a different lineup.
Well, I don't understand why William Nylander didn't play center yesterday.
I could not agree more. When I saw the lines, I thought, what are we doing here? He was the bright, shining star of Wednesday night's game.
You said the presence. Yeah, we felt the absence of Matthews yesterday because they were so much weaker up the middle of the ice. I don't understand why that decision was made. Alexander Kerfoot is your number one center yesterday. I guess John Tavares was, but he was playing in the middle between Nylander and Bunting, and I don't really have any reason or justification for that. It didn't make sense to me. Is that too much for William Nylander? Played two games in a row through the middle
and
of the ice?
He looked great on Wednesday, and he also wanted that opportunity, and Keith praised him for it. So I don't know why 24 hours later you go off the script.
Like, yeah, it doesn't make
I understand
sense.
Getting some different looks, you know.
Was it about the third line and wanting to see a look with Engvall and Camp on the third line and McCann? Like, I don't get it.
Boosting up the bottom six opportunities
decisions shouldn't be made around Bobby McCann and Pierre Engvall and wanting to see something in the future. It should be, okay, let's put our best foot forward here. And clearly, the way William Nylander played the other night, he deserved to run it back in that position again. And I think that he was mostly a non-factor in the game because all of a sudden he's not playing with the same level of player and you don't have the same level of talent through the middle of the ice. I think it was a pretty clear issue that, you know, they were missing that presence and that stability up in the center position. And they probably could have had that if they just put William Nylander through the middle of the ice.
So lineup configuration's definitely different. And I thought that Michael Bunting suffered from that. Maybe we're starting to see how much of a boost playing with all-star players has given him. And I think there was a stretch here.
Proximity to all-star players.
Exactly. Last night, you wrote in here, 8 years, ? I don't know. I feel like...
That was more tongue-in-cheek.
No, I understand. Like, we go through these phases where Michael Bunting is a top 3-4 forward on this team, and it looks like he's doing that. He's driving his own line, or he's driving his own play. Last night didn't look that way.
Well, it's a blessing and a curse, right? Let the ability to play with great players, because that is a real skill.
Mm-hmm.
To be someone who can allow great players to be themselves, to be great, is a skill and something very, very valuable. However, it's hard to put a price tag on it.
We literally talked about this.
And when things change and they can't produce at the same level mm-hmm. without those players, they're not the same entity without someone else helping them, and in turn, them helping that player. When that relationship is fractured or broken or whatever, when there's an absence, whether there's a dip in performance, whether there's, you know, preference to play with another player, if there's an emergence of another player, whatever that is, are you comfortable mm-hmm. in buying too much stock in a player whose production hinges on being associated with someone else, someone better than them?
1 month ago, we had the discussion of, does locking up Michael Bunting influence locking up Nylander and Matthews? Like, they're a part of, you know, you want to have an opportunity for them to stick together, or, you know, this guy staying on a team-friendly deal is going to impact their line. Like, we had this conversation. Didn't feel that way last night.
Well, it's a weird power dynamic with you just mentioned, too. Like, Matthews kind of holds the key. I mean, before you're signing Bunting to anything, you're having a conversation with Matthews like, is this the partnership you want moving forward? Mm-hmm. We're talking about a contract extension with you very, very soon. Is this who you want to play with? And do you want him around for X number of years? Like, I feel like you have to have those conversations. If you're not, then you're creating a situation that he might not be all that into. Maybe he wants to play. We already knew he wanted to play with Marner, wasn't given that opportunity. Maybe he feels some type of way about Michael Bunting. I don't think that's the case. I think
other than that they're best friends.
I think it is a strong relationship, but maybe he sees that there could be something better for him. I'm not really sure. But when it comes to Bunting, it's to me, it's all about getting the discount if you can get it. You can't pay market value for him because his market value is enhanced by who he's playing with. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be reminded every time he's not in a situation where he's playing with either Matthews or Marner or Nylander, and even when there's space between a guy like him and Nylander, that it's not quite the same. So how do you put a price tag on that? How do you evaluate that? It's really, really challenging.
The refs also, so we saw the Michael Bunting, frustrated Michael Bunting last night. You know, I think there was certainly a missed call, maybe one or two. One with the helmet came off. There was a lot of, like, the last two games, I don't like to talk about reffing because it's, you know, you're going to get bad games. But two back-to-back games where there was questionable missed calls for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I know that there's non-Leafs fans that say, oh, all you complain about is that the Leafs get screwed by the refs. Okay, maybe the last two games I could start to push that.
Well, this is back to the McCann conversation. You remember the missed calls. You don't remember the ones where you're fortunate.
Oh, and for sure.
Pontus Holmberg blew a wheel, and they got a power play out of it.
That didn't
And Michael
sense.
Bunting got chopped
yeah, there's
on the shoulder
there's
and neck.
There's going to be, like, throwaway penalties. And I know this.
It happens. You hope it evens out. I think I'm with you where it's not quite evening out.
Well, I just think about the camp got blindsided. Mm-hmm. And there was two high sticks in Wednesday night's game that I think were missed. Last night, Bunting gets his head removed and
well, I think
he's
Bunting's
rattled. Of
when,
course,
when you're throwing your helmet off and stuff like that, I think it influences referees. The numbers would suggest, hey, maybe it's not quite influencing them yet because he's still drawing penalties.
Second in the league. With the most penalties drawn.
With a bunch of ultra-talented players. Mm-hmm. But I think that gets tired. That act gets tired eventually when you're, maybe you've only seen him a couple times. You're refereeing, you know, Maple Leafs. Maybe you get five Maple Leaf games a year. I don't know exactly how it works out. But eventually when you see this guy yell and scream and complain and throw the histrionics, all that goes into it, eventually you're like, okay, I've seen that before, and I've also seen the replays, and I've done study of my game, and I've been told, hey, you got to watch out for Michael Bunting because there's a little bit more to it every single time, so just be a little bit more careful. Eventually, I think he's going to get less and less of the benefit of the doubt, and that's frustrating because real penalties, like that one with Ben Chiarot coming down really, really hard on him, that should have been called and weren't in that moment, but I think this is a reputation thing, and I don't think it's going to get a whole lot better for Michael Bunting in this regard.
Well, I also think with the game script, it wasn't going well. There was frustration. You saw it from him, whether it was justified or not, from a missed call or a call that was soft. But I think it just continues to raise the question of the Leafs' physicality that is sometimes missing. And I think we saw that a little bit last night, some scrums or some hits or some whatever.
That was a business decision night. Like, they just didn't want to get their hands dirty. Mm-hmm. And that's something that
Leafs fans bring up often, and I think it's justified when you watch a game like last night with no punch. As I said, no punch in terms of play, but no punch in terms of sticking up for teammates, getting messy. Like,
and to be fair, the Lightning have business decision nights, too. I can't say that for some reason. The Lightning have those nights, too, where they just like, I don't think this isn't 100%. I don't think we're going to get, you know, fight tooth and nail for every inch of the ice tonight. That happens.
Yeah.
Especially, it's more likely to happen on the second half of a back-to-back. But the Lightning can produce it when they need to. And I will always maintain that, you know, it is different come April. You have to have other things.
I'm not
things.
Asking for fights last night.
You have to be able to play when it gets harder to play. When it becomes unpleasant, you have to be able to play in that environment. When it's pleasant, Leafs are nearly unbeatable. They're really good when it's pleasant. Real good when it's pleasant. And I don't know if that was even unpleasant last night. But there were a couple moments like Tavares got buried behind the net. Mm-hmm. And someone kind of like held the captain of the Maple Leafs down after cross-checking him to the ice. And Tavares' net, like, he just gets up and doesn't even look back. And no one else really gets in there.
Have you ever seen him yell?
I think maybe at the refs a little bit.
No like, way.
Not at the opposition. But that's their DNA. That's their makeup. That's how those four are. And I do think it permeates through the lineup. But some, you'd hope there's a couple that don't allow. And Wayne Simmons played in the game. So what are we even talking about? Like maybe the situation didn't allow that, right? Because if Wayne Simmons didn't get mad, when he's the one that's supposed to be able to get mad and get into those situations. It's just, it felt like a business decision night, and the Maple Leafs need to find a way to stick up for themselves when it does matter. And that might be in them, but it's not in them on a business decision.
Well, night. It should certainly be in them Saturday night, because you're playing a very familiar foe Saturday night.
And the perfect example of a team that can raise their level when need be.
100%. So bring it on Saturday night. It's not going to be a nice, easy game. It's going to be gritty. It's going to be tough. There's a lot of emotions in that. So flip that switch on Saturday night. But I don't like having to flip it on and off at times. Like, it should be a little bit of a team dynamic or an identity that can carry through in, you know, the back-to-back on the road when there's a bit of a sleepy game for the Leafs. I have one more before we talk Raptors. I think the Maple Leafs pull their goaltender too early.
You do?
Yes.
When do you want to see the goaltender pulled?
When you have possession of the puck. So Leafs are up, are down 2-1.
I'll be honest, I put my head down and then I just saw it going into that. So I don't know how that happened.
Okay, so they're down 2-1 with over 2 minutes and 5 seconds or something left in the game.
Was it a faceoff?
It was a faceoff in the offensive zone, and John Tavares loses it, which he doesn't do much, goes back to the D, behind the net, out, hits off, like they clear the puck.
Yeah, I saw it go
goes in the net. You didn't have to, like, really push it right then with 2 minutes left. I understand this face-off offensive zone with 30 seconds, 20 seconds, even, you know, 45 seconds, maybe you do that. But if the Maple Leafs win that draw, gain some patience, pull the goaltender, get that sixth guy on there. I mean, in hindsight, obviously, it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
But you lose the draw and the puck goes in the net, the game's over. It's 3-1.
I'm not.
With 2 minutes
left. I think you're hung up on the result a little bit, because if you're talking about like probabilities and you're talking about what should happen, okay, John Tavares, it's close to a 50-50 proposition, but at least the odds are in your favor that he wins the draw, or at least establishes or helps establish another 50-50 opportunity to get the puck. But what are the odds that bank shot, I believe it was, from Sherratt?
Yeah.
No look bank shot off the boards is going to the back of the net. Like,
I understand
a 5% chance that goes in. And if not, it misses the net, icing, you start over, you get a second faceoff. And if John Tavares wins more than 50% of his faceoffs, this one should land in your possession, I guess.
I just think there's enough time to the Maple Leafs to have a sustained 6-on-5 with possession.
So what would
that they would score?
What would you rather have? They collect the puck behind their own net, no forecheck, the goaltender leaves then, and you have to break into the zone, or 50-50 face-off offensive zone, goaltender pulled.
Option one.
To start. You'd rather have to go through the five players?
Probably.
You'd have to execute. You'd rather execute a breakout.
I want the Leafs to have possession when they pull their goaltender.
Okay.
There was another opportunity, and I'm not going to be able to name the game, but I remember watching at one point this season where a similar opportunity happened where they pulled the goaltender a little early. They lost possession of the puck. Boom.
I mean, it's frustrating when that happens.
Yes, I'm pinpointing
something.
You look
like an idiot when it happens.
Yes, I'm pinpointing one opportunity last night that ended up losing them the game, and I get that. But I just think maybe it's because I've played in those situations.
And that's why I asked you what you'd rather have.
I would rather have...
Because the breakout is not easy to execute.
But that wasn't... I'm not comparing between those two.
No, but I want to ask you.
But that's a hypothetical question that didn't happen.
But I'm asking you.
Yeah.
It's a fair question.
Okay, no, I said option one.
You'd rather pick the puck. Let's say you're going to pick it up from a defenseman. You're playing in the middle of the ice. Whatever.
Sure.
You pick it up from the defenseman. The goaltender leaves. That six man or woman jumps onto the ice. 6-on-5 to break into the zone. That's more appealing to you than 6-on-5, fresh start, win a faceoff with your best faceoff.
With 2 minutes left of the game and plenty of time to get possession and score a goal, yes.
Okay.
That's just my thoughts.
I don't think it
didn't age well when they did it last night, and I get that. It's a one opportunity to pinpoint something, but I don't know. For me, you had ample opportunity to not have to push it. So
I'm not one of those people that says, like, you know, face-offs don't matter. Like, face-offs matter in big situations like that. Losing the draw hurt them, for sure. I do think once that faceoff was lost, though, very, very small likelihood that Sherratt makes that play again.
Again, I understand that, and I agree. Bruins also didn't help the Leafs last night, losing their first regular season game since April of last season.
Sorry, what?
This was their first home regulation loss all season long.
Wow.
To the Kraken.
The Kraken.
And there's an opportunity to, like, if the Leafs had won last night, wouldn't that be nice? Make some space.
You go to 7 points back.
Boston Bruins losing to the Kraken or a wagon. That's all I got to say. I can't believe that stat is a real stat. The Bruins have not lost a home regulation game this season. And the Kraken are red hot, so going into Saturday night, both teams looking for a bounce back.
Seven straight wins for the Kraken. And I think this was a seven-game road trip. Like, they've been touring the East Coast, it seems like, for the last 2 weeks. Wow. What's going old Dave Hackstall to win the Jack Adams? Is he going to ruin this for me?
He could.
Because I'm set up so beautifully with Jimmy Montgomery. You can move on while I figure out
what this is. So Leafs lose, but I like to end on a positive note. Raptors win. But is it a positive thing? Because this can go two ways. It's their first three-game winning streak of the season, which is another wild stat. Hadn't put together three wins all season long. They do this against, as we mentioned, on Tuesday night, a lower opponent in the Charlotte Hornets. They have them on a two-game homestand. They win again last night, 124-114. Another night where the starters all contributed in a nice, even balance, and the bench once again pulled up their socks and were a part of this win. And now a two-game, three-game sample size of this where no players have played over 40 minutes in the game. The bench has been contributing not only offensively better, shutting down on defense, and eating minutes, and the Raptors go 3-0 on that stretch. Where previously in the three other games, 11 players had over 40-minute games. The bench scored 29 points in 138 minutes. The starters had to really shoulder the workload, and they lose all three games. Looking at the numbers, I think that you clearly have put together a game plan that can work in favor for your Raptors. Can it be sustained? That's the next question.
I will say, and yet, like, as you mentioned, as you laid out, everything was working. Bench was good. Starters were great. They were still, like, that was a three-point game or a five-point game if LaMelo Ball doesn't completely miss a layup, an open layup, in the final 90 seconds, I think it was. Like, all the good stuff that you mentioned. Starters, great. Bench, fine. Adequate. Outplaying the other one. And that's all you can really ask for. It was still, like, a little tenuous at the end.
Well, they never pulled away.
They never pulled away in that game.
Fun for Daniele, who was at the game.
And watching his favorite player miss layups, apparently.
Keeping it close.
No, I think you shouldn't take negatives from it, I don't think. I loved the start from the starters. I thought they were, like, really as decisive as I've seen them all season long, where it wasn't waiting for the shot clock to diminish. It wasn't waiting for the second or third option. It was get the ball, get to your spot, and score. It was really, really... it was almost militant. It was just like, this is what we're doing. We're doing it right away. We're not thinking about it. We're doing it. And I thought that led to a really, really fantastic start. The first 8-9 minutes from their starters, it kind of sagged a little bit immediately with the bench. But that's the stuff that we're looking for, especially from those top guys, especially from a guy like Scotty Barnes, a little bit more involved early. But it was everyone. Like, you got a brilliant Siakam night. You got what you want from Scotty Barnes. Gary Trent didn't shoot the ball that well. Fred was kind of unnoticeable at times, but did hit that big three after LaMelo Ball missed his bunny at the end of the game. At the end of the game. I just thought they were really, really, they had intent early. And maybe it's easy to have intent against Charlotte, but what I saw, especially from the starters, was really, really impressive. And a few of those players, Siakam and Scotty in particular, were able to carry it all the way through the game. Mm-hmm. And that is enough. At least against Charlotte. If Siakam and Scotty are going against a team like Charlotte, that should be enough. And I really, really was encouraged by their start. But it's Charlotte. I don't know if that start is going to work. I don't know if that game plan is going to work against the bigger teams in the NBA. And I am concerned a little bit that they weren't, like, cruising to the finish line, that the reserves weren't coming in to finish the game when it seemed like a lot of good things were happening for the Raptors.
It is Charlotte, as you mentioned, who are an NBA worst 4-17 since December 3rd. 5-21 versus Eastern Conference opponents this season. Lost 10 of their last 11 in the conference. Toronto, 13-3 in their last 16 home games against Charlotte. It's Charlotte. Mm-hmm. But are you putting together a little boost of momentum? And is that the path you want to go? And that is something that three-point Grange, Michael Grange, who we're going to have on at 7:30, wrote a great article about last night, posted up in sportsnet.ca. Three-game winning streak, but is that going to affect how Raptors management views where we are right now at the trade deadline? And is that what you want them to do? As you mentioned, it's Charlotte. It's two games at home. It's three in general. First time you've won three in a row. But, like, are you going to allow this to jade your perspective of what's next? It's tough because these are the sample sizes. You're seeing your starters play really well. Pascal was so efficient last night. He missed like three buckets. He 11 for 13 field goal attempts, 3 for 3 three-pointers, and 10 for 12 on the line. Mm-hmm. Like efficiency, and he's been like that all season long. Scotty and Fred VanVleet combined for 17 assists. The bench is looking good. How do you zoom out, though, and look at where you're at, where you're going, and not have this jade your opinion? Like, that's
well, it's an easy
tough
zoom out because it's Charlotte.
Right?
Right.
As we gave you the stats about Charlotte, they're not good.
Yeah. I mean, you should celebrate a victory. You should be excited. You should be happy after taking care of business in the manner that they did this week. But you can't make, you can't all of a sudden trick yourself into believing things are
but
completely
different. But you
could. Different. In order to...
I don't want you to, is what I'm saying.
No, you shouldn't. But there's still a chance for things to be different. I'm not, like, ruling that out. Mm-hmm. If they start to play this way and beat good teams in this exact same fashion, then, yeah, I think you can not trick yourself and be like, hey, let's you know, trade a future and try to bolster this team and get in the play-in and try and make it work. Like, I'm not suggesting that's going to happen. But maybe the belief in the core, the belief in what they have, the belief in the vision and Nurse and Masai and all that stuff is reaffirmed if they turn it around midseason here. And again, it's silly to think of, oh, two wins against Charlotte. That's the launch pad to a successful second half, but it could be. And if they start meeting their potential, if they see the ball go in the hoop and it helps them, then maybe they can salvage something from the season, maybe prevent the implosion or the impending implosion that some people have this team earmarked for. Yeah, there's something to work with here. There's something to build on. However, these are just the first bricks in the foundation. Like, we're getting the cement. The cement's not poured yet. We got a lot of work to do if this thing's going to be built back to where you expected it to be built to. And we'll see if they can make more strides towards that.
Well, in the next 4 days, they play the Hawks, the Knicks, and the Bucks. 3 games.
It's a nice little gradual increase in competition there.
So
at least they're not hit over the head with it like we were with winter this morning.
I think it's just, it's an interesting practice in how we have now tried to evaluate this Raptors season, the ups and the downs. You're making strides forward. Is that really where you want to go? And I think it's a very fair question to pose. And we're going to ask Grange about that. He said, I hope it doesn't shift the way that this team and this management.
Well, I can't imagine it would. But if it does, that
but
means,
like hoping,
that,
sorry,
means
hoping
gonna
that they're going to catch lightning in a bottle and have this push
well,
like
well,
last
don't,
season.
Don't hope for lightning in a bottle. Just see if it happens. See if they can start stringing together.
But how much more time do we have to make an evaluation?
They have all the time. They're the ones that can set the market.
You're right.
They don't have to do anything in haste. Just see if
and I don't think the trade value is moving too much right now. Like, you know what you're going to get from Fred and OG.
Just continue to evaluate. Continue to put players in positions where they can maybe show you more. I think that's something that's been happening with Gary Trent Jr. back into the starting five, leading a bench unit all by himself and getting some good results out of that. I think there's a little bit of a showcase thing happening with Gary Trent Jr. Maybe Precious, who has had two decent nights in a row. Again, I know Charlotte, but getting back up to speed after an injury derailed his season. Maybe we're going to see a couple things over the next little while that could be instructive, whether it's in the trade conversation or the future of this team. This is the key part of the season. How does everyone perform now? It's not about wins necessarily, But how does this team perform, respond to the early season adversity, grow as a team, or grow as individuals who can be trade assets or future building blocks for this team?
Yeah. I don't know. I find that I feel frustrated often with this.
Of course. Why wouldn't you be frustrated?
Yeah, well, maybe Grange can help. And I always think it's interesting because Raptors, I don't know if I don't follow Charlotte Hornets Twitter or any other Twitter but Raptors Twitter. And I think it's a stark divide here between what people want. And I think that I'd love to know on the text line, 590-590, what you think. Because does this give you, like, does this three-game sample size do anything for you? Like, there's people that are frustrated that, like, you want to celebrate a win like this, but what is it doing for you in the long haul? I don't know. But the positive takeaway is Pascal Siakam continues to be someone that you could hope that could lead this team down the road. And so did Scotty Barnes last night. It would be nice to see some consistency. It's the one game that we decided to fade Scotty Barnes and take him off our betting roster of confidence. But he does a good night like that.
That's the single most frustrating thing about this season to me is still Scotty Barnes, because he was all I want him to do and be is involved on a night-to-night basis. Like, you don't have to be scoring at the rate Pascal is. You don't have to be a dominant defensive player like OG. I just want you to make your presence felt at all times or as much as possible. And he's in and out. And this isn't a betting thing. He's in. Yeah. This is a developmental thing and about the Raptors in the future in him. I just want him involved. Some nights he's involved. Other nights he's completely invisible. And that's an issue. And not even invisible. Complaining. Involved.
He's visibly complaining, but
yes.
Getting 0 buckets.
And not
quarter.
Really doing anything productive. So I want to just see production from him. It doesn't always have to be flirting with a triple double like he did last night. Couple rebounds and an assist away, or a couple assists and a rebound away. Like, he was really, really good and productive. There's no excuse to not make your presence felt on a night-to-night basis if you're Scotty Barnes. That's really the most important thing for me, I guess, down the stretch. Yeah, it's like, okay, make decisions on Fred and Gary Trent and figuring everything out. But in terms of, like, the future and the success and trying to build a winner again, it's about Scotty Barnes having a productive second half of the season.
Well, look at what LaMelo Ball did. He's 1 year before Scotty Barnes for the last Rookie of the Year award.
Yeah.
And he's got 20 more points in each of the last, or sorry, he's got 20 plus points in 15 of 16 games since returning to the lineup. He's
a really dynamic player.
Dynamic player. And yeah. He's 1 year above Pascal in terms of his
And he clearly
NBA
gives you something
career.
That Fred doesn't. Not to, like,
he's no wonder not, he's Daniele's favorite player.
He's not leading a successful franchise.
Yeah.
But he's like, there are some benefits to getting involved in the lottery, getting involved and being bad for a bit, because you can add that boost. You're not getting LaMelo Ball, you know, 17th overall.
I saw this video circulating where younger fans were asked, like, who do you think of when you hear the word Melo? And everybody said LaMelo Ball and said, the real Mel. It's just funny. So that was two different generations right now.
He's one of, like, I think he's one of the most popular players in the league among the next generation.
He was getting swarmed on his way out with people looking for autographs, sign my shoes.
And it's the aesthetic thing. Like, he is visually appealing. The way he plays, the way he passes the ball, the way he drives, even the way he shoots is a little funky, but it works, or at least it has worked in this two-game sample. I don't know if he's a dominant shooter. I don't think he is. But, yeah, I don't really want to go through covering a team that performs at the way that Charlotte Hornets are. But at least, like, it's fun to watch him. Yeah.
What do you think of Mason Plumlee that shoots the free throws like that?
Does he shoot with his offhand? He shoots with his left hand.
He does like the lift up.
It's the push pattern, right?
Yeah.
It's the very that's how they taught it 60 years ago.
Two texts in the text line before we take a break. I asked 590-590, what do you want for this Raptors team? Brendan and Barry goes, blow it up. Three words for three wins, blow it up. And love the core, retool, don't rebuild. And the last one, Alex from Hamilton, burn it down. Whew.
I just think, like...
See, there's the who knows.
But the core is like, what's... Define the core. What's the core? Is the core Scotty and Siakam? Does the core include Fred?
OG's
probably in the core.
Yeah. Let's say
OG's
it's
your best trade.
Let's say it's that core four.
How do you supplement
Leafs a core? Leafs have a core four. Raptors have a core four.
And Fred's the fourth?
I would think just because of his leadership and experience and... I mean, maybe the season's a tough sample size, but yeah, I'd say he's part of your core.
I agree, but you can't really supplement that core four if you don't trade from it. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
What do you get? I don't think you're getting much for Gary.
Tear it down?
And I, what
Burn
else?
It down?
What
or...
else is there? What else is there?
Jay and Cordis. Scotty, OG, Pascal, Fred. Yep, that's the answer, Jay. All right. We'll have that text line open all day long.
Maybe
590, 590.
Maybe the core three is a better thing.
Oh, okay.
And then you define that three. We'll see.
Our day consists of Charles Davis at 7 o'clock. Most heartbreaking piece of information I got is that he doesn't call postseason games. What is the point of watching if you don't get to hear Charles Davis' rich timbre of his voice?
Counter to that, what does Charles Davis do when he's not on the call? How does he experience an NFL weekend? Kind of curious.
Michael Grange at 7:30 and Gunner Brent Gunning at 8 a.m. That's our lineup. And of course, we're returning pick aside. This is it. This is where we can make some ground. We need to go ham this weekend, Justin, against the guys behind the glass.
And just a little different format.
Yep.
We're going to flip a coin who goes first. Then you pick, we pick.
We go,
you pick,
but
we pick.
Go through the schedule.
Chronological, rotation, yep. Number order, whatever it is. Just you can't choose your own adventure here.
That's right.
You have to choose the game in front of you.
Okay, lots of tee up for Super Wild Card weekend. Tonight, no Toronto sports in action, so you just get to rest your eyes before a jam-packed weekend of Wild Card. You got Leafs, Bruins, Saturday night. Hawks are here against the Raptors. And, of course, just some great football games and some that we're less excited for, but nonetheless, lots of viewing experience. Send in your Wake and Rake picks at 590-590 for our anchor submission at 8:30. When we tee all this up, we're going to take a break, and the A-list is on the other side.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
All right, did you watch Ted Lasso?
No.
Great. This is going to go well.
You knew that.
Oh,
you
I
set
forgot.
Me up for failure here.
Well,
I think I have a gist if you still want to float it out.
Okay, well.
Nice guy, coaches a team that he's not qualified to coach.
Right, okay. So
inspirational.
That's kind of the situation. Funny. Jamie Tart, I don't know if you remember that. Well, you don't because you never watched it. Anyway, there's parallels, but the main story is that a guy on this English soccer team, Macclesfield Football Club, his name is Tom Clare.
Okay.
Has decided to leave the team. And let me read this club.
Sorry, what was his job?
He's a
player?
Player on the team. Let me read you the tweet from the club. Club statement on Tom Clare. Macclesfield Football Club can confirm that the club has granted Tom Clare an extended period of leave in order to appear on this year's Love Island competition.
Yes.
Tom approached us with the request a number of weeks ago, and we're happy to show the same loyalty that he has since becoming one of our first ever signings back in 2021. Despite the fact that we are disappointed to lose a player of Tom's caliber for the foreseeable future, we will also recognize the incredible opportunity that this presents for both him and his family on a personal level. Tom remains very much a part of our plans here at the leasing.com stadium and has expressed his unwavering desire to return to the club after the show. We wish Tom every success and look forward to welcoming him back to the club in due course.
I got news from Macclesfield,
yeah.
FC. This man's never coming back. He's not coming back. There's no chance. If you're on one of these shows, you are an auto celebrity. Auto celebrity.
He's young.
He's going to be pushing.
He's not at the end of his career.
He's going to be pushing some sort of like.
He's going to be an Instagram influencer.
Whatever
after this.
Mixture, Athletic Greens, whatever it is. I don't know. No free ads, but whatever.
Athletic Greens. That's a good one.
He's going to be forcing Athletic Greens on his followers at the end of this and not playing for this team. This team is below. Trying to figure out exactly.
I don't know which.
Below level four.
Yeah, they're bad. Like, it's not like he's playing in the Premier League.
Like, he's a junior C hockey player. Like, he's going to be a celebrity. You're not going back to junior C.
I just
C
can't believe
hockey.
The statement that the club put out. We are supporting this endeavor, this personal opportunity. It's an opportunity he can't turn down.
No, he can't. I'm telling you, he can't.
To be on Love Island. Have you watched Love Island?
I have. I've seen a little Love Island. Actually, won some money betting on Love Island.
You did not bet on. You're a degenerate, Justin. You bet on Love Island?
Yeah. It was really easy, too.
How do you do that?
I don't know. It was like this like weird special thing, and it was who wins, and it was just a popularity contest. And it was so obvious who the most popular couple was.
Oh, my God.
So I unloaded.
I had never thought of you as a reality TV bro.
This man is very good looking.
Yeah? I didn't even look that up.
He's got a future on Instagram. He's never playing professional football.
Oh, he is extremely good looking, right?
He's too good looking to play soccer.
Well, he's got a future on Love Island. So stay tuned for the newest season because Tom Clare.
Good thing Macklesfield Field
is quitting his sporting career to get all horned up on Love Island.
He's gonna do well there, I think. He's gonna have a successful reality TV career.
All right, let's take a break. Charles Davis on the other side. Let's get you teed up for Super Wild Card Weekend. And what does he do when he's not calling games? Hopefully he texts us play-by-play. Wouldn't that be nice?
Ooh, we fire up the group chat this weekend with Charles Davis?
Wow. A dream come true. That's next.